scores! Gilmore scores! The ball cleared out!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Yell. Aguila's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, let's get this hour underway. It's Thursday, April 4th. Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson along with you on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And lots of pertinent right now Calgary Flames stuff we'll get to this hour. But we want to kick off this hour with a little bit of fun. We want to have some fun to kick off this hour, because I want to take you back to Wednesday night for a second. Madison Square Garden, game between the New Jersey Devils and the New York Rangers. And boy, you took a look at the starting lineups and you wondered what was going to happen at puck drop between a couple of rivals.
Sense of anticipation here.
We know what's going to happen.
The puck is dropped, the gloves are off,
and it is
going to be a line brawl. A repeat. Barkley Goodrow, Kevin Ball, Curtis McDermott, Matt Rempe. Curtis Lazar has taken Jimmy Vesey down. The main combatants are exchanging rights.
There's all of them.
Oh, everybody. Keandre Miller and John Marino.
Oh, my.
A full-on line brawl Wednesday night. 10 combatants, 8 ejections. And I am quite certain that is the first game-starting line brawl in the National Hockey League since January 18th, 2014, one that will be remembered in this city forever.
Right away, Wes Garth grabs
him. Oh, my goodness.
And now we've got McGrattan ready to roll as well with Weiss as they dance around. And Cestito also dancing around with the Flames. McGrattan, now they go at it. Here's a couple of good shots
and by
McGrattan.
BX went right after Schmied.
Four fights going on now. 5 fights on the ice. Wow, we haven't seen this in a long time at the start of a hockey game.
This is incredible.
It truly was. Those fights, by the way, Brian McGrattan versus Tom Cestito, Kevin Westgarth versus Kellen Lane, Ladislav Schmied and Kevin Bieksa, Blair Jones versus Dale Weiss, and then that fifth fight, I believe the last one to get going was Jason Garrison of the Vancouver Canucks and the gentleman who joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now, former Flames defenseman Chris Butler is with us to kick off the program. Chris, first of all, appreciate the time. It's Pat and Wes. Second of all, how are we doing today?
We're doing great, thank you. I'm just actually on the way to the Philadelphia airport, heading home from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. I was down there with our American League team for a couple of days, so just heading home.
Well, it's good that we could get some time with you, and I'm glad we could get you before your flight, because I would love to hear. I'm sure you saw the highlights on Wednesday night when the Devils and Rangers broke off in their 5 dances to kick off a game. And I'm sure that gave you some flashbacks to January 18th, 2014. Hey, I'm curious what was going through your mind when you saw those highlights last night.
Well, I was kind of having a chuckle because it does throw you back to, gosh, over 10 years ago. And you knew that something was going to happen between McDermott and Rempe, the types of players that they are. I've had a chance to watch Matt Rempe wreak havoc at the American League level here with Hartford. We play them quite often, and he's made a name for himself in the American or in the National Hockey League in a short time. And was I anticipating a 5-on-5? I was not, but it put a smile on my face, and everybody's talking about it today.
And by the way, Chris is with the Pittsburgh Penguins now in player development. And so, okay, so you're watching that play out. Did it bring you back to that line brawl you were a part of? If it did, what type of memories do you have from January 18th of 2014?
Well, Brian McGrattan was the puppet master of the whole thing. I remember being in the locker room in Vancouver. I think we'd played Nashville the day before. And Big Earn was all excited as we were playing 2-touch before the game, talking about how he's going to start a brawl. And, you know, we've got Jones and Westgarth and McGrattan starting up front. And then I remember Bob Hartley reading off their starting lineup. and he lists their three forwards, and I had a pretty good idea what was going to happen. And then he announced that Kevin Bieksa was starting, and I remember just thinking, well, whoever the next guy is probably going to be my guy, because I've seen what Kevin Bieksa could do, and I don't think I'd come out on the good side of that one.
So, okay, so I got to get, so if and I went and watched the full 11-minute clip on YouTube earlier today, just watching it back again. I must have seen this thing like 100 times over the last 10 years because it's such a memorable moment. So what happens is we all have a pretty good idea that something is going to happen on the outside. So you knew for a few hours that there was going to be something like this to start the game? Like, you were pretty aware that this was going to happen a few hours before the game?
Yeah, I remember Bob had called in our line of Jones, McGrath, and Westgarth and told them that they were starting. And Big Earn, being the guy that he is, willing to stand up for his teammates and probably being the toughest guy in the league at that point, just had a big old smile on his face for the next couple of hours as he was getting ready to do what he did best. And then as we typically go through the process of announcing the starter shortly before we go out, they read their lineup, and I thought that there could be there's a real good chance of some serious fireworks there, because I knew too, talking to Lottie, and I were playing together on the back end, I remember him saying that Bieksa didn't care for him very much. I don't know if something had transpired when he was with Edmonton a little while back, or if something had happened previously that season, but I had a pretty good idea that those two would be tangling, and like I said, Mr. Garrison was going to be my guy at that point.
So you have a pretty good idea of what your role is. Like, you know that you're going to have to be a part of this. Is that guaranteed? Are you 100% in that, or are you kind of waiting to see how things play out?
Well, I mean, if you look at the face-off and kind of the back and forth of what happened with Bieksa and then Kellen Lane with it being his first NHL game, I actually have, I don't know Kevin at all, I have a lot of respect for how he tried to handle the situation, given it was the kid's first game and trying to step in there and do something special for that kid. Unfortunately, it didn't transpire the way that maybe the kid drew up his first NHL game. But I would imagine it's one he'll always remember. But that being said, you don't want to be the only guy that's not participating in something like that. And it was probably the most text messages I've ever received from friends and back home and different guys I knew around the league shortly after that happened.
So we're in conversation with former Flames defenseman Chris Butler on Flames Talk, now with the Pittsburgh Penguins in player development. We're looking back after the Rangers and Devils had their line brawl on Wednesday night. We're looking back to that infamous Flames Canucks line brawl from January of 2014. It's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you on this Thursday.
Chris, thanks. Thanks again for doing this. I remember my memories of being in the press box in Vancouver that night. I know, you know, even watching the highlights kind of pop up last night on Twitter, finally someone shared kind of an aerial view and said this sort of shows the madness that's happening on the ice. But when you're one of the 10 guys in it, what was it like on the ice in that moment? Like, what kind of memories do you have of what it was like to be in that sort of ring or cage or whatever we want to call it?
Honestly, you're so unaware. You don't hear the noise, the craziness. You understand kind of what's going on around you, but you also have a large man on the other side of the situation that's trying to punch you in the face. You're trying to do everything you can to hold your own. I certainly wasn't a fighter by any stretch of the imagination, but I was just trying to hang in there and kind of do my part to stand up and show our group and my teammates that, look, if one person's going to be doing it, we're all going to be doing it together. So watching the video back is probably more fun than you certainly see everything else that was going on around you at the same time. But you really have no idea what's truly transpiring in the moment and how big of a deal, I guess, it is around the league and around the hockey world.
I know lots of us have certainly watched the video today and many times since that night in 2014. But for those who haven't, maybe fill us in. How did Chris Butler do in his fight?
Oh, I think it was kind of a pillow fight back and forth. I don't remember. I don't really remember landing anything, and I don't remember getting hit, but maybe in the helmet once or twice. And I left unscathed, and I was aware enough to know that if you're a second altercation, you get booted out of the game, let alone the third, fourth, or fifth. So I left the ice, through the bench and went into the locker room, and then nobody else trickled in. And we're sitting there in the dry room watching, the live feed of the game. So I actually went back out and tried to go sit in the penalty box with everyone else just to kind of hang out with the guys and have a laugh about what just happened. And then they sent us all back into the room. And the guy that orchestrates the entire thing ends up staying in the game in Brian McGrattan, which is pretty funny if you think about it.
Yeah, it is hilarious that he's the guy who got to take some more shifts that night, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't tell the story of the famous Flames Canucks Hockey Day in Canada brawl without touching on the first intermission when John Tortorella goes for a little visit to the Flames locker room. Did you know what was happening at that point at all? Because lots of people obviously find out later, with the live camera in the hallway. But what was that part of it like from behind the scenes?
Well, obviously we had the four of us that got booted out of the game. We'd kind of mixed in a workout there in the first period because we had a short night of work with just the 2 or 3 seconds of ice time. And then I remember we had a few injured guys and a few other scratches with us. Like Derek Smith was in there. I want to say David Jones was injured at the time. And then Clint Malarchuk was in there as well, who obviously hit the highlight reel there trying to get after Tortorella. And we're just watching the live feed of the camera in the hallway there. And all of a sudden you see Tortorella come buzzing down the hallway. And that's when we all kind of filtered out of there. And then Clint came charging out of there. And I will say it's probably the best thing that that Brian McGrattan did was to kind of keep Clint out of that situation, because Clint was seeing red, and it's Clint's a pretty tough old farm boy. And I like to think that he would have had his way there and probably inflicted a little bit of damage on old John Tortorella in that situation.
Yeah, I always remember thinking to myself, goodness gracious, I think Brian McGrattan may have saved John Tortorella from a bad outcome. Chris Butler's with us looking back on that Flames and Canucks brawl. I was watching it back. I'm curious, is when you and Garrison were getting ready to go, watching the replays, you and him kind of look like you're tangled up. And you're kind of watching to see everything as it plays out, and then you decide to go. Like, what's being said between the two of you before you actually decide to start throwing them?
Well, it was a really brief conversation. We kind of locked onto each other there for a second, and then I remember him saying, "Everybody else is going, we might as well too." And I said, "Sounds good," and away we went. So,
pretty simple,
pretty civil.
You only had three, I believe, in your entire NHL career, three NHL fights. Like, have you ever talked to Bob as to why? Like Shane O'Brien, he had plenty more fights than you. He was watching from the bench. Did you ever get to the bottom of why you were one of the five that were out there?
I never did. Never asked Bob about it. Never really talked to Bob that much in my time there. But, I mean, if we were looking to really send a message, I think old 55 probably would have been a better guy to do the job than I was. Obi was an awesome teammate and a really tough guy, too, that probably would have done a lot better than I did in that situation. But Bob and Obi didn't get along from probably the day that Obi got traded there. And it was never going to be a good marriage, unfortunately. But Obi was an awesome teammate and probably was a guy more fitting for that situation.
How about, and then you look back, you're a D-man, and Dennis Wiedemann plays more than 38 minutes that night. I think it was 38:05 when it's all said and done. What are the conversations like between you and Dennis or Dennis and the rest of the group as that night's going on?
Well, I remember Wides was standing in the tunnel there trying to get off the ice, and it's completely congested with everybody. And then Bieksa comes out of the hallway and through some side door. And I remember Wides being so exhausted and pissed off that all he wanted to do was go to the locker room and put his feet up for 15 minutes. He was just like, can we get over this nonsense and everyone just get the hell out of the way.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Did you, I remember hearing people in Vancouver talk about how that whole situation kind of went the other way, didn't bring them together and kind of sent them down the wrong path for the rest of the season. And, you know, Torts was only one and done that year in Vancouver, but everybody has always talked about how that might have been a moment that brought your group together. And I know it was the second half of the season and you moved on after that season, but did you feel like that for the group at the time that was something that brought you all together?
Oh, it absolutely galvanized us. I mean, we were struggling. We weren't in a playoff position. I don't remember how we were going at that time, but it gave us something to talk about, something to rally around, other than, you know, the post-practice bag skates and Bob making us do mountains and yelling at us all the time. And it just was like, it gave us another topic of conversation than other than this coach is driving everybody crazy. So it definitely brought us together. It brought the group tighter. And, you know, I think things like that, like you mentioned, it can go one way or it can go the complete opposite direction. And it obviously was a little bit more of a distraction for Vancouver, but it worked as a positive for us.
Was that immediate, Chris? Like, did you notice that right away with your group?
Right away. I believe the game went to a shootout that night, and I honestly, I don't even remember the result.
It was a 3-2 Canucks win in a shootout.
Okay. But it put everybody, for whatever reason, in a better mood. It was just something, I don't know if that's what we needed exactly to happen. I'm sure we would have loved to replace that with 4 or 5 more victories that year that would have put us into a playoff position, but it just gave us something more enjoyable to talk about. And it's so unique to our sport, but for whatever reason, it worked for us.
I know you're working with the Penguins, and we'll get more into that in just a minute. I don't know how much you're comfortable saying about another team, but is there any concern this could go the wrong way for the New York Rangers?
Oh, I don't think so. That seems like a pretty good hockey club this year.
Yeah.
They've got goaltending. They've got great defensemen. They seem to have just a little bit of everything this year. And they've got an experienced coach that I know those guys love playing for. He coaches with a ton of passion. And obviously you can see that the other night. But I don't see how that affects them negatively or would, because, you know, in a situation where I think everybody was anticipating McDermott and Rempe. And McDermott's a tough cookie. I mean, he's got to be one of the toughest guys in the league right now.
Yeah.
For the young kid to step in there and do as well as he did. And then the other guys on the Rangers kind of almost being more of the aggressors in a situation where Rempe was probably in a position where he kind of had to accept the fight. Not that he would turn it down, but New York kind of showed everybody that they're not going to back down. And I think that'll bring that group together.
Based on your personal experience, how many text messages did Matt Rempe get last night?
Oh, God. A heck of a lot more than I did. he was the main event. I was the undercard that probably wasn't even on the OLN network back when hockey was on that. So.
He was
Madison Square Garden center stage. I was not.
It's like one of the, it's like at Wimbledon, you're on like, you're on court 4 as opposed to the center court. Do you ever?
Yeah, mom and dad are watching.
Yeah. do you ever think back and say, like, for us here in Calgary, and you know, you had a good run here in Calgary, Chris, you know how passionate Flames fans are. Do you look back and say, hey, that was something pretty cool I was a part of. Like, I'll always be one of the trivia answers for one of the more memorable moments of the last number of years for Flames fans. Does that ever cross your mind?
You know, it's funny. The clip pops up once a year on Twitter as a reminder. And I do have a chuckle and I watch it every year. And you kind of laugh about the situation now, but for a guy that only had a handful of fights, it's kind of cool having a memorable one like that.
Yeah, absolutely. How are you settling into the post-playing career, and how are you settling into the development role with the Penguins?
Oh, I'm loving it. I'm having an absolute blast. And I wouldn't be in this position if it wasn't for an old teammate of mine in Tom Kostopoulos. And, you know, we played together in Calgary, and We hadn't spoken in a handful of years, and then ran into each other at the Frozen Four a couple of years back. And then he got promoted in the summertime, and we kind of rekindled a friendship, and I just shot him a message saying congrats on the promotion, and then I was hired a handful of days later. So it's been a really fun run. As I went down to the American League later on in my career, you know, you kind of become an acting part of the player development staff, and you're working with the younger kids, and you're trying to help them learn life as a pro. And I thoroughly enjoyed doing that. And it's hard to call what I do now work because it is so enjoyable.
What exactly are you taking care of? What falls under your role with the Penguins?
You know, it's changed quite a bit this year with new management. Previously, it was spending a lot of time on Friday, Saturdays on the road, going out and watching our young prospects play, whether that's major, junior, or college. And this year, it's changed a lot with Kyle Dubas coming in and Jason Spezza. You know, just had different ideas of how they want to run development. So we spent a lot of time with our farm systems in Wilkes-Barre and Wheeling in the East Coast League, and we're on the ice more, and we're running practices and drills with the guys. So it's awesome to be back out on the ice and trying to help these guys in any way, shape, or form.
Well, it's super cool to catch up with you. I'm glad we could make it work. I know you got a flight back, so we really appreciate the time, Chris. It was cool to look back on that, and while you were here, I know both Wes and I always really appreciated catching up with you, and so good to do so a decade later. Have a continued good run with the Penguins, and have a good rest of the season. Hey, thanks so much for doing this.
Of course. Thank you guys for reaching out. Good to catch up with you guys.
You too. That is former Flames defenseman Chris Butler with us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline as he was part of that line brawl on Jan 18th, 2014 at Rogers Arena in Vancouver. And we were thinking as we were watching that play out on Wednesday, we were doing Flames Talk live, and I just kind of whispered over to Wes, I'm like, there's a line brawl going on in New York between the Devils and the Rangers. And we were talking about Andre Kuzmenko at the time, and I had it on my screen because somebody else gave me a tip off. I think it was Logan who was like, dude, there's a line brawl going on. I'm like, what? So, you know, onto the Sportsnet Plus account immediately. And here's a nice little plug for Sportsnet Plus. You can go watch live, or you can back it up to wherever you want. So I go right back to the start, and there we go. And I'm watching it. And that fight between McDermott and Rempe was just absolute. That was the McGrattan and Sestito. That was like your heavyweight main event while the undercards were going on. And first thing I thought of, no question, was that's got to be the first five dance partner brawl to start a game since the Flames and Canucks. And,
sure.
It was fun to then, you and I started reminiscing about it. And then we started thinking like, so who should we call? Like, who should we try to reach out to? We were thinking Westgarth. He took the opening face off against Bieksa, but then he and Bieksa didn't fight. And we're like, you know what? I got a number for Chris Butler. We should reach out because he was like the sticking out like a sore thumb guy in the five-man opening lineup that night.
And he's also, as anyone who's been listening just heard, he's also a terrific storyteller. Mm-hmm. Great self-deprecating humor. If the Peter Marr Good Guy Award existed when Chris Butler was playing for the Flames, he's one of those guys that would have been in the mix every year. And so really fun to catch up with him. I got to ask you, you said you watched the 11 minutes I watched again today. What part struck, like all these years later, what really struck you?
Well, I forgot about the Bieksa like trying to step in for the faceoff like three times, and they're like, get out of here. And every time he pulls Kellen Lane, and I forgot, first of all, the poor guy's name. All I remember is Torts post game being like, I feel so bad that I did that to Kellen Lane. And
he
said,
I owe him another game in the NHL. Like, I have to make sure.
Because he felt so bad about ruining his NHL debut. And, you know, there's Bieksa who's like, I know what's going on. And he, by the way, Kellen Lane got 9 NHL games that year.
All that season.
All that season. Exactly. so Bieksa trying to, like, I don't know if he was trying to defuse things or just make sure he's taking a bullet for a guy playing in his first NHL game. You know, here's a number three skating in for a faceoff. You're like, okay. And it was funny because, you know, the play-by-play.
I think, though, at that point, I think he's stepping in, and I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think he's stepping in thinking, I can sort of defuse this a little bit. I'm going to tell Westgarth, no, the kid's not fighting. Westgarth just wasn't taking no for an answer.
Westgarth had no, like, and the officials didn't let Westgarth and Bieksa go at it. And so Westgarth then went and got Lane, and then Bieksa's like, well, screw it. And then he went and, not jump, but he went after Laddie Schmid.
Yeah.
And then, again, the best part is just watching Garrison and Butler, who are kind of like, they're doing like the, yeah, we're grappled, but like, are we actually doing this? And both of them are looking around, and everybody else has dropped the gloves. They're like, all right, let's go. And it, like, that's the part that made me chuckle the most. I did not remember that part about how they were like, I guess. Yeah, okay. I mean, might as well be 5-5. Let's do it.
The thing that I just learned in the last half hour that I hadn't heard before, like, I wasn't aware that that line had known for hours that they were starting. I think that that's a little bit of behind-the-scenes intel that we hadn't been privy to that probably would have cost Bob Hartley an even bigger fine than he faced at that time, because I you know, Bob's story, not that anyone ever believed it, but Bob's story was, well, those guys had a great game last game. I'm really going to reward them by letting them start. But,
well, did you hear Green and Laviolette and their, the way, like, Green's blaming it on Laviolette,
right?
Laviolette's blaming it on Green. You're like, okay, you guys both know what was going on.
The guy who deserves some sort of medal, other than Dennis Wideman playing 38 minutes, is, I remember Shane O'Brien for the rest of that night, like, the Canucks and especially the Canucks forwards are thinking, this guy, like, this is a scrapper. And if we can goad him into a fight, the Flames are going to be down to three defensemen.
Three D-men.
And they, Shane O'Brien took more chops and cross checks, and every single whistle that night, someone had their gloves in his face right away. And he did, at one point in the game, I think, get dinged with a 10-minute misconduct. But
late in the game,
he refused to go. And it must have taken, especially the type of player he was, it must have taken everything he had.
Oh, actually, no. He got a 10-minute misconduct, not a game misconduct, but just a 10. He got late in the, about midway through the first period.
Okay.
But so he did, he was able to come back.
They targeted him that entire game.
And the bet.
The other thing I noticed from the replay was sort of like, lots of people online have been laughing about the fact that Matt Rempe, Calgary raised, that is Matt Rempe, after a while, like, he's kind of crouched for the opening faceoff last night, and then he just stands up and starts, like, shaking his gloves because he knows it doesn't matter where the puck squirts off this faceoff. I'm clearly fighting this guy beside me. And in the video from 2014, you see Tom Sestito do the same thing.
And McGrattan was feigning, like, he's crouched down.
He was kind of pretending to be interested.
Okay, you're not fooling anybody bigger. The best part about that, too, is that they weren't partnered together at the time regularly, but it was Rick Ball and Kelly Rudy on the television telecast at the time. I texted Lou early today. I go, do you remember the five? And he goes, Bieksa tried to take the face off, and Westgarth was the one who took it. So a few texts, 960-960, as we wrap up the conversation. This says, Shane O'Brien was probably on the bench since he had just come from Vancouver and was maybe still buddies with a lot of the Canuck players. As we learned, it was because Bob was not a big OB fan and was not going to give him the pleasure of being part of that in his old stomping ground. Remember, there was some rumors that O'Brien liked to frequent the Roxy. Remember that? Unconfirmed rumors.
There's guys you find out years later the coach didn't like them, and there's guys that it couldn't be more painfully obvious. And Shane O'Brien was in the latter.
I can remember Jason Garrison being a good scrapper in juniors for the Nanaimo Clippers. Pretty sure if he actually wanted to fight against Butler, Butler might have been in trouble. By the time 2014 came around, though, Garrison definitely was not a fighter. That was such a great night, And to think Lane only played 9 NHL games, yet he was touted as the next big thing. That comes from Curtis in Monterey. That's just a few of the texts. People talking about when Derek Engelin did. Different fight. Derek Engelin was game one or game two of the 2015 series against Vancouver.
Yeah, I don't remember which. I thought it was at the Saddle Dome.
No, it was definitely in Vancouver okay. where he had the two guys.
Yeah, okay. Anyway. Your memory's better than mine on that one.
I have been proven to be wrong many times on these things. Thank you to Chris Butler for reminiscing on that. That was a lot of fun. Chris joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for a Thursday edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca and they'll revitalize your exterior paint. Finish at Steinberg. Wes Gilbert's in a post media. Another voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. We'll focus things on the now for the Calgary Flames after we were reminiscing about a little bit more than a decade ago in that line brawl between the Canucks and Flames with Chris Butler to start the hour. So now let's focus in on what the Flames are looking at for the rest of the season and going into Thursday night against the Winnipeg Jets. Jets, we all know the Flames are playing out the string. I mean, everybody understands what's going on. But after what happened on Tuesday night and how, you know, we heard Mackenzie Weegar, we even heard Michael Backlund and how out of character kind of some of his post-game comments were following the game against the Ducks. This clearly, what Ryan Huska said, they were awful. You don't hear that very often from the head coach. Like, that game clearly struck a nerve with how poorly they played against Anaheim. So even though there's only 8 games to go, and even though they're playing out the string, how important is it for you to see them bounce back? What will it tell you about this group with how they respond to what happened on Tuesday night?
I mean, ultimately, are we going to remember what happened in a meaningless game on April the 4th, a month from now, a year from now? Probably not. For me, it's more about the big picture, the final 8 games of the regular season. And I don't want to see any more efforts like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all wondered why Ryan Huska didn't pull Jacob Markstrom in the final 3-4 minutes with his team trailing by 2. And when he was asked about it at practice on Wednesday, while he wouldn't say that he was sending a message to his team, don't you think it was pretty obvious that he was sending a message to his team?
Like, yeah.
He basically said, I felt like if I pulled the goaltender, it was just going to end up 6-3. So for me, that's a pretty clear message.
Well, when I followed up and said, was it a message to the team? He goes, they can take it however they want. I thought that was really,
yeah, exactly.
I thought that was really good too.
And ultimately to me that said, yeah, they better take it as a message. And the other interesting thing that he said on Wednesday was he was asked about his young players and how important it is that they play the right way heading down the stretch. And he kind of pivoted and started talking about the veterans. So for me, I'm anxious to see how the veterans respond, because I feel like the young guys are going to follow the old guys as they have all season long with this team. And I think that the leadership group, for the most part, and there have been a handful of bad games, but for the most part, they've done a good job blocking out the outside noise when it was around and, you know, playing the right way, even though they're in danger of being mathematically eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs with any kind of loss tonight. So I'm anxious to see how the leadership group, how the veterans respond, and I expect the younger players to kind of follow in line with them. But I like to see the Flames play hard down the stretch. And again, they've done that for the most part. There have been a handful of games where you could question their effort. For me, Tuesday's game against the Ducks was one of those games. So yeah, let's see how they respond tonight.
I think what you're sort of measuring tonight, and certainly way more than whatever the scoreboard shows at 8:45 Mountain Time, I think what you're measuring is what sort of pride they played with. And I always am curious to see what the response is after a veteran comes out and says the sort of things that Mackenzie Weegar said the other night. And I think guys were all in agreement that Mackenzie's comments were absolutely justified. I think we all kind of nodded our head as he was speaking. And yet when you come out and sort of question whether your group was playing for each other, whether they're, you know, care enough or not care enough, but showed enough care for the guy sitting beside them in the locker room, I always find that next game to be really fascinating. And so that to me is the response I'm looking for tonight, is just then, you know, Derek, I totally agree with you. There haven't been a whole lot of nights this season that the Flames have sort of failed to measure up in the effort department. And yet for 12 or 13 guys on the roster, I did think that was the case against Anaheim. And so as long as you see that sort of pride individually and as a group, I think you'll be satisfied with what, I guess, the response was tonight.
I guess the reason why I think it is important to see, and Derek, I like the way you put it. It's more than just this game against Winnipeg. It's the final eight games of the season. And I think that's probably the best way of putting it for me too. They've talked so much about how, yeah, we know we're out of it and we know the situation. The situation is what it is. But whether it's been Blake Coleman or Mackenzie Weegar or Rasmus Anderson or Jonathan Huberdeau or Michael Backlund or whoever's been talking, it's been all about, hey, we're trying to build something here. We're trying to set something in place and really establish an identity going down the stretch. And they really felt like they took a step forward in doing just that against LA on Saturday night. And even though that win didn't get them any closer to realistic playoff life, it was still a win that they could feel good about and something they could say, hey, if we can have more efforts like that down the stretch, we can feel like we're doing just that. And there are going to be nights like maybe against the Jets. They play really, really well, but a better Winnipeg team with a chance to clinch a playoff spot also plays well and just beats them because they're more talented. And that's what Mackenzie Weegar said. The last thing that he said in his post game on Tuesday night was, I don't care about the results. I just want to see us play, to paraphrase, I just want to see us play hard and battle for the rest of the season. And so, yeah, that if you're going to talk about establishing an identity, and if you're going to talk about setting a standard and all these things that become rather cliche when you're in a situation like the Flames are in, but if you're going to keep going back to that, you got to put your money where your mouth is. And I thought they did that on Saturday. They did the opposite on Tuesday, and now they've got eight games to go. And Wilsey, I'd like to see them do a whole lot more of that, putting the money where their mouth is as they go down the stretch here.
Yeah, I mean, the trend of them playing down to their competition continued on Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. Now, in their defense, they've been really good against the Ducks the last few years outside of Tuesday. So it's not a problem that they've had with that team necessarily. But teams like the Blackhawks and the Blue Jackets and the Senators, they've struggled against those groups. So I guess I wasn't completely surprised by what I saw on Tuesday night, but still a little bit, because I thought they played really well in the previous two games. I thought they deserved a better fate in that 5-3 loss to the Blues last Thursday. Thought they were the better of the two teams in that game. And I thought they certainly deserved to win Saturday's game against the Kings. I thought they were better from pretty much start to finish in that 4-2 win. So, you know, I expected them to come out and play hard against the Ducks. And some guys did, but too many guys didn't. So let's see how they respond against a team that is clearly better than them. But against a Jets team that they're 2-0 against so far this season. So for me, you know, if you're looking for something to incentivize the guys, it's like, hey, let's sweep this three-game season series against a playoff team. And the other crazy thing that the Flames have accomplished against the Jets this season, the Jets are number one in the NHL in goals against per game. The Flames have scored 11 on them mm-hmm. in two games, 5-3 and 6-3 wins. So it's a group they've had success against, should have some confidence against, and I'm expecting a much better effort to win or lose in Winnipeg tonight.
Yeah, and you certainly hope that they show their rookie goaltender in Dustin Wolf, who we all expect to start tonight against the Jets. Like, you hope he gets the support that he's going to need against one of the best teams and one of the strongest contenders in the Western Conference, or else could be a long night for everybody.
He's Derek Wills, along with Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Daily Flames Roundtable for Thursday on Flames Talk. And, you know, on Tuesday, as we were getting set for the Flames and Ducks, we talked about Anaheim and didn't really compare them to Calgary, but we're talking about how, you know, as the Flames are embarking on their retooling mission, here are the Ducks who are en route to missing the playoffs for a sixth. In fact, they're already confirmed to miss the playoffs for a sixth consecutive season. And it's talked about, you know, could that be a cautionary tale about how hard it is to, you know, be really, really bad for and expect to that to lead you back to the playoffs automatically, and how difficult that can be. Well, on Thursday night, they're playing the Jets. And going into this offseason, a lot of people looked at Calgary and Winnipeg and said, geez, there's a lot of similarities between the two Prairie teams. And, you know, we know how things went with Calgary, and only one of the guys re-signed. That's Michael Backlund, and the other five are no longer here. Winnipeg didn't have the same quantity. They did say goodbye to Blake Wheeler as he went and signed with the New York Rangers, but they shocked everybody when Mark Scheifele and Connor Hellebuyck each signed eight-year extensions just before the start of the season. I don't think anybody saw that coming when it happened. And now here they are. They've got an opportunity Thursday night to clinch a playoff spot, and they've been one of the best teams in the Central Division all year long. Gents, you know, as we continue to look at where the Flames are and where they're going, you know, do we see the Jets as kind of a example of maybe what could have been had things gone a little bit differently for the Flames?
Potentially, but I would argue that even though they wound up trading all but one of their pending UFAs, at least the big name guys, that the Flames had most of them for a good chunk of the season. So they traded Tyler Toffoli in the offseason. They re-signed Michael Backlund in the offseason, and then traded Nikita Zadorov and Elias Lindholm and Chris Tanev and Noah Hanifin. But they had those guys for a good chunk of the season. So I guess you could argue that the whole thing hanging over the team made it more difficult for them to be at their best. And I do think that there is some truth to that. But, you know, this is a Flames team that hopefully won't go down the same road that the Ducks have. I don't think that you can ice a team full of teenagers and guys in their early 20s and expect to be competitive. I don't care how talented those players are. And the Ducks have some really good young players on their roster and guys who should continue to get better. But I think there are a bunch of cautionary tales around the NHL. The Ducks would be one of them. The Sabres, who have two first overall picks in their lineup and had a second overall pick, and Jack Eichel, who would have gone first overall most years and traded him and got a good return for him. You know, it's been over a decade since they made the playoffs. And I thought this might be the year, but they kind of look further away now than they did at this time last season. So who knows with them? The Coyotes are in their 111th rebuild right now, and they haven't been able to figure out how to turn things around. So the Jets are an interesting team, a team that hasn't had a lot of luck on either side of special teams, but they're very good at even strength. And a team that if they can maybe get going on the PP and the PK, I think could surprise some people in the playoffs, because they've got a goaltender in Connor Hellebuyck who can steal games and potentially steal series. They've added some goal scoring, and I think that's one area where they were lacking. But bringing in a couple of former Flames and Sean Monahan and Tyler Toffoli has helped and should continue to help. And, yeah, I do think that if Connor Hellebuyck and Mark Scheifele hadn't re-upped, this team could potentially be in a very similar spot to the one that the Flames are in. But when you've got two veteran players and two important pieces of your core that decide they're going to stay, I think that sends a message to everybody inside the dressing room and outside of it. So, and two other notes on the Jets. I think they made two moves that were addition by subtraction. I think moving on from Blake Wheeler, with all the issues that they appeared to have inside that dressing room last season, was an addition by subtraction. And I think moving Pierre-Luc Dubois was as well. Now, they got a good package in return for him, so it's not like I would say just give the guy away for nothing. But he hasn't had a lot of success in the three stops he's made in the NHL. So it's a Jets team that I think, because they were able to get those two guys signed, has had a really good season and could potentially do some damage in the postseason. But for the Flames, I'm not sure there's much of a comparison to be made at this point in time, because they were only able to keep one of those pending UFAs. And it's too late, unless you sign them during the summer, to go down the same road the Jets did.
Yeah, this is a good question, Pat, because I think you're right.
That's two days in a row.
Two this week. Yeah. I think they could be a sort of what could have been comparable, and yet so much of how we're going to look at the moves that the Jets made is going to be measured moving forward. Like, if this team goes on a deep playoff run, if this team wins a Stanley Cup, if this team hangs around in contender status for the next several seasons, no one is going to question the decisions to extend Scheifele and Connor Hellebuyck, two guys in their early 30s, for the next seven seasons. And yet there's still time for the Winnipeg Jets to become a cautionary tale too, in that they sort of decided to put their youth movement on hold to double down on this core. And before everyone with a 204 number starts texting in, I'm not saying that was the wrong decision, but they very much tied their cart to a couple of guys who are starting to get into their moving out of our prime years. And so much of how we ultimately judge that decision is going to be based on what, with Scheifele and Hellebuyck, this team can accomplish over the next little while. Just like we would have been having the discussion about, okay, well, Elias Lindholm, you've just extended him at 30. You've just perhaps extended Chris Tanev in not even his early 30s. Like, what decisions have you, Tyler Toffoli, what does that mean for the future of the franchise? We could still have those conversations about the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, in the short term, I do wonder if things had gone slightly similar. Like, maybe, because, Will, so you talk about the addition by subtraction, and I think a lot of people believe that, especially the way things went in the first couple months of the season and some of the comments made by Nikita Zadorov and how those landed with an absolute thud in that locker room. I think that we all agree that they probably needed to move on from Zadorov, and regardless of what they got, it was better for him to be moved out. But I do wonder, like, I wonder how different this season looks if sometime in training camp, or right around like the second game of the season, when Conroy and Hanifin's camp really got down to brass tacks and got close, and it was right around then that he was very close to signing. I wonder if in that time frame, few weeks prior, right around that time, had Hanifin signed, and maybe you already had Backlund, and maybe that gets Tanev to sign, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, these guys have re-upped, and Hanifin signs his 8, and Tanev signs for 3. You already had Backlund signed. I wonder what that does to your point, Wilsey, about the message it sends and the way it could galvanize a locker room. Like, you hear stories, and they're kind of legendary stories in Winnipeg, right, about how when the news was announced that Scheifele and Hellebuyck re-signed, the roar you could hear in the Jets locker room, you could hear it from everywhere in the building because it went over that well in Winnipeg, and you just wonder what that could have done. And I'm not saying it would have been the right or the wrong thing for the Flames, because a lot of people who are listening right now believe the Flames needed to move on from these guys, needed to go in a different direction, needed to pivot, and needed to say goodbye. So I'm not saying this even is, oh, if this would have happened, it would have been better. I'm just saying, I do wonder in the little picture, in this season short term, what that would have done and how different things might look on April 4th in a parallel universe if things went a little bit differently. So that's kind of how I'd answer my own question, which, by the way, Wes said was a good question.
Yeah, it was a good question. And I also think it was a good question because two comparable markets.
Now, yeah, yeah.
With all due respect to Winnipeg, and I really enjoyed my time in Winnipeg and both the AHL and the NHL over the years, I would say Calgary is a more desirable market, but both small Canadian markets. You've got to deal with currency. You've got to deal with cold winters. So the fact that they were able to get those two guys to re-up, I'm sure energized not only the fan base, but the organization as well. And I do wonder if, and I thought Michael Backlund might be the first of many dominoes to fall. It didn't turn out that way, but what if Elias Lindholm signs, or Noah Hanifin or Chris Tanev signs? Do other guys follow their lead? I do wonder about that. I guess we'll never know the answer to that question, but it hasn't gone that way, and now I'm looking forward to seeing which way it does go and what Craig Conroy does with all those draft picks and prospects that he's put into his stockpile during the offseason.
Thank you, as always, Willsy. We'll see you in a bit, and drive safe. It's slushy out there, so be safe, please.
Yeah, yeah. You'll see me in a bit, and hopefully we see the end of the snow in a bit, too. I've had enough.
Yep. No disagreement there. He is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll wrap us up for this hour. Thanks to Azam and Cam, our producers this hour. Thanks to Simon as well. And this hour wraps up, as does the Daily Flames Roundtable. It's brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at Mercedes-Benz Country Hills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.